Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Thursday, October 8th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande. Here are our top stories this evening. First Lady Grace Mugabe today denounced the factionalism that she says is continuing in ZANU-PF and urged the beneficiaries of the land reform who are failing to utilize their farms to surrender them back to government.
It means something wrong. You stop it. Whoever is engaging in factionalism.
A Pindura man is in trouble over comments he allegedly made about President Robert Mugabe reading the wrong speech in Parliament last month.
And he was charged with the contravening Section 33 that was undermining or insulting the authority of the President.
And many Zimbabweans say the government should subsidize the high cost of blood in the country to save lives that are being lost unnecessarily. These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned. A Pindura man is in trouble over comments he allegedly made about President Robert Mugabe reading the wrong speech in Parliament last month. 28-year-old James Mwaya of Chipadze high-density suburb in Pindura was arrested and spent two nights in custody following a jibe on the 91-year-old Mr. Mugabe's parliamentary gaffe and was charged with contravening Section 33 of the Criminal Law Codification and Reform Act for allegedly insulting or undermining the authority of the president. Mwaya is said to have had a verbal altercation with a ZANU-PF councillor for Ward 11, only identified as Masango, when he made the remarks in Shona, saying, "Mugabe is old, he can no longer stand, that's why he read a wrong speech." Studio 7's Blessing Zulu spoke with his lawyer, Ernst Jenner of Jenner and Associates Legal Practitioners.
Yeah, he was arrested. I think he spent 3 days in police cell, and he was charged with the contravening Section 33 that was undermining or insulting the authority of the president.
But we understand that for now he has been released. Why is this so?
Because when he was then taken to court, we had then to engage the state on the propriety of the charges he was facing. And the state then indicated that they now need to refer the dossier to the Attorney General for authority to prosecute. And the indication was that they intended them to proceed by way of summons after securing the Attorney General's authority to prosecute the matter.
That was lawyer Ernst Jenner of Jenner and Associates speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu. First Lady Grace Mugabe today denounced the factionalism that she says is continuing in ZANU-PF and urged the beneficiaries of the land reform who are failing to utilize their farms to surrender them back to government.
Be honest.
People must understand this. If you are given land, you must till it. If you can't, be honest and say that you are failing so the land can be allocated to other people who can fully utilize it. Even the fallen heroes in Mozambique will be happy when they see us using that land.
Addressing a rally in Chimanimani, Manicaland province, Mrs. Mugabe, leader of the ZANU-PF Women's League, called those engaged in factional wars insane, adding that they should stop it before they are exposed.
Factionalism, personayo.
Down with factionalism. I said it in a briefing that we had earlier that some people think that factionalism is rife only in the high ranks of the party. But there are people in the grassroots who are engaged in factions. They are dividing the party. I see some are getting very angry because I raised the issue of factionalism. There is something wrong. You stop it.
For perspective, reporter Ntungameli Nkomo reached political analyst Blessing Vava, who says factional wars will continue in ZANU-PF as party members position themselves for a post-Mugabe era.
Well, first and foremost, we must understand that issues of factionalism in ZANU-PF have been there for quite a long time. Last year, they told us that factionalism was being caused by Joyce Mujuru. Now that they've removed Joyce Mujuru, it seems that the cancer of factionalism is still embedded in the veins of ZANU-PF.
She also took aim at farmers who are not utilizing their land fully, saying that they should return it to government so that it can be allocated to farmers who can fully use it. What do you make of that?
Well, for me, I think that is a mere cheap talk coming from Grace Mugabe. We all know for a fact that nothing has been happening in the farms. We know that the majority of the beneficiaries of that land reform were ZANU-PF chefs, and they have totally failed to run these farms. Maybe it's an admittance on her part that their party has really failed, or the land reform, I should say, was a total failure. In the sense that they failed to come up with mechanisms to make sure that the beneficiaries of land reform, one should have an experience of somehow to make production in those farms. Whereas having land is a right of every Zimbabwean, but there were productive lands that were already making meaningful production to our national fiscus in terms of the agricultural produce that were being produced, that was being produced in those farms. But for now, for Grace Mugabe to say that, I think it's just a mere talk.
That was political analyst Blessing Vava on the line with reporter Ntungameli Nkomo from South Africa. From Manicaland, our reporter Lloyd Moyo, who was there when the First Lady spoke, is with us today on the line. Lloyd, how are you doing?
I'm fine, my brother. How is it?
No, I'm fine. Can you tell us exactly how the mood and situation was like? Because we understand that there were more than 1,000 farmers. Was that the situation?
Yes, the gathering, it was of about, I would say, put the number at 1,000 people, among them farmers, mostly from the Cashew Valley, the farm which used to produce Cashew Valley beans, and others from surrounding areas such as Nanyas Irrigation Scheme, Chaco Irrigation Scheme, and they were very happy, particularly that they were given some tractors by the First Lady, which were sourced from Brazil, but which they were told they were supposed to be paid for in the long term, but otherwise the arrangement for the repayment was actually something which they appreciated.
We read in some sections of the media that people were being forced to contribute $8 for this meeting. Did you get anything to that effect?
Yes, some villagers who were back from around the 8 districts of Manicaland province, they were able to pay $8 as bus fare and as transport fare to be ferried from their places of residence to Mutambara Mission, which was the venue of the First Lady's rally, which was held today. And some of them said they were at a loss as how they were supposed to have paid for that, yet they were supposed to have been ferried free of charge. And some said they had to sell their chickens, goats, to raise such an amount to be taken to the venue. And today it was a really hot day with temperatures ranging between 30 to 32 degrees Celsius, and they had to wait a very long time before the first lady was to address them.
And how did the message, the first lady's message, resonate with the people that she was addressing?
Actually, the first lady tried to impress on the people whom she addressed that they to put a stated effort to ensure that the Zim Acid program succeeds, but otherwise they were issues to do with hunger, because most of the people who attended the rally were from Region 5, where there is little rainfall, particularly in Chimanimani, Nyanyazi, Chakowa, and some came from as far as Nyanga, where there is, the area is drought-stricken, and they were actually calling for food handouts because they could not harvest anything for the past three harvests.
Thank you so much, Lloyd. Have yourself a good day. Anyway, the rest of the day.
You're welcome, buddy.
Thanks. That was Lloyd Moyo, our correspondent from Manicaland. Faced with worsening economic challenges and growing unemployment, Zimbabwe could be losing lives unnecessarily daily due to the high cost of health care. In particular, the cost of blood remains beyond the reach of many. Patricia Mudadigwa has more details on the story.
With a unit of blood, which is 250 milliliters priced at $135 at public hospitals, many Zimbabweans are complaining that the cost of blood is far beyond their reach. Many who spoke to Studio 7 say blood is not a luxury, and as a result, the government should subsidize the precious liquid to save lives, especially as people donate the blood for free. The cost of blood is even higher at private hospitals and clinics. Studio 7 visited a number of hospitals in the capital and found many patients and their families saying they are having to sell their prized possessions on the cheap to save lives of loved ones, but others are stranded. They just have nothing. Tabeth Mungu, who bled severely after giving birth recently, says her life is in danger as she's stranded at hospital due to failure to purchase blood, putting also the life of her firstborn child at risk.
It was actually shocking for me to discover that 2 pints of blood cost about more than $200. And for someone like me who doesn't have a stable job, it's actually very expensive and I cannot afford it. And therefore, I recommend government to subsidize and assist the people like us to save lives.
Victor Mukonowe Shure's relative was involved in an accident recently and lost a lot of blood, but he was unable to purchase the 3 units needed for infusion.
We are even surprised about the price of blood that is going for $135 per pint, which is way, way off, considering the fact that blood is being donated for free. At the moment, I've got a relative who is right here at Parelenyato to admit it from a car accident. She needs additional blood, but we can't afford to buy the blood because of the price of the blood is so expensive. We failed even to buy the 3 pints that is needed at the hospital. So she's just suffering in the hospital, trying to recover, but there is no money to buy the blood.
Beauty Kanoto's husband needs blood before a mandatory operation to save his life, but she cannot afford to buy the blood for him.
Blood is very expensive, and we can't afford to buy it, since 1 pint costs about $135. I have a patient who wants to go to the theater and they want blood, but I can't afford to get it. So I am confused.
We sought the comment of the National Blood Service Zimbabwe Public Affairs Manager Esther Masunda, who defends the high cost of blood sold in Zimbabwe.
When you're looking at the costing of blood, we look at aspects of we've got overheads that we incur as a service. We're looking at the recruitment side, whereby our teams go out to go and collect that blood and also mobilize the donors. We are also looking even at the pack itself, in terms of the pack itself, where the blood goes and where the blood is then put when the donor is being bled. So you find that that's a cost, and those blood bags are not manufactured in Zimbabwe or in Africa. They are actually supplies from Europe. And then you are also looking even at the testing. When the blood is collected, when it's now being processed, it needs to be tested. It goes through a number of tests. And what we have, what we call test kits, those are also very expensive.
Esther explains to Studio 7 that the cost charged is equivalent to the cost of processing the blood, adding the blood organization does not make any profit, despite the high cost being passed on to the patients and their families.
When you cost this, you then see how much it comes up to, and it comes up to about $141. At the present moment, we are charging $135 per unit of blood.
Masunda told Studio 7 that due to the prevailing economic conditions, the government has stopped subsidies to the National Blood Service, adding this has contributed to the high cost. Currently, the National Blood Service of Zimbabwe only receives funding from the National AIDS Council to source only testing kits that screen the blood for infections. According to the National Blood Service of Zimbabwe, adults who use 80% of the blood from the blood bank are the least in terms of donating blood at 20%, while school pupils who donate 80% of the blood collected in Zimbabwe are the least users at 20%. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, I'm Patricia Mdadigwa.
And now we take a look at regional and international news. Rwanda's Supreme Court has cleared the way for President Paul Kagame to run for a third 7-year term when his current term expires in 2017. The court ruled Thursday that amending the constitution to remove the current 2-term limit for presidents is legal as long as the process respects the law. President Robert Mugabe's recent trip to New York to attend the United Nations 70th General Assembly has reignited a debate over the millions of dollars spent on such foreign trips by the president and his huge entourage. Though some people told Studio 7 they had no issue with Mr. Mugabe attending the UN General Assembly as head of state, some analysts say it's the excesses that have become synonymous to the annual New York visit that have had some people talking. President Mugabe, who's on the United States sanctions list barring him from traveling to the country, only visits New York once a year during the General Assembly. In the process, he brings a huge entourage that analysts say is an unnecessary cost, especially with this country's economy not doing well. Former Finance Minister Tendai Biti says September, the month when the General Assembly is held, has become an annual shopping jaunt for Mr. Mugabe and his entourage that normally includes his wife Grace, several government ministers, close associates and state media journalists. Biti, who was finance minister in the government of national unity, says the issue is not about the one trip to the UN, but the disproportionate amount of resources that are put in traveling.
The issue is not about one particular trip. The GCA has made over 40 trips, and if each one of those trips costs a minimum of $3 million, you know, you're talking about amount of money, 40 times 320 million. So that's the issue, and that the money that is spent on traveling is actually more than the money that has been spent on education. So we have schools in Zimbabwe which are made of pole and dhaka, and where there is wood sitting with, even with animals. So there is need for rationalization of government expenditure.
Although Studio 7 could not establish the actual number of delegates accompanying Mr. Mugabe this time around, sources close to the delegation say this year he has slightly less than 50 people, showing he has scaled it down, but not enough for many. The delegates, according to the sources, received $12,000 in allowances for the 1 week they were in New York. Information Minister Chris Mushowe could not be reached for comment to clarify the figures. However, ZANU-PF Central Committee member David Ndlovu says the trips are necessary because Mr. Mugabe is not only president of Zimbabwe, but also African Union chairman.
The president is not only the president of Zimbabwe, he's not only the leader of Zimbabwe, he is the head of African Union currently, and when going out, he will be representing the African Union, and the expenses incurred there are being paid for by African Union, not by Zimbabwe. So it's at no cost to Zimbabwe. If he doesn't fulfill his duties.
Another former government minister, Moses Msilandlovu, who was foreign affairs minister in the Unity government, tells Studio 7 the problem with Mr. Mugabe's trips is that they are not audited or monitored by the ministry. Biti agrees with Ndlovu, adding during his time at the finance ministry, he would haggle with the president until money for the trips was reduced.
And that's a serious drainage of resources in a time of austerity, and it's therefore unacceptable. You know, but where Mugabe is involved, there are no rules.
Mugabe's travel itinerary was this year doubled following his double role as chairman of the Southern African Development Community and the African Union that saw him travel to more than 25 countries within the first 6 months of the year. While some of the trips were paid by the African Union, critics say Zimbabwe spent millions on his travel that could have been used elsewhere.
Meanwhile, the millennial generation in the West, the so-called young techs in the ruling ZANU-PF are full of energy, savvy and educated. Faced with a bleak situation as President Mugabe's age advances, the ambitious group in ZANU-PF calling itself Generation 40 or just G40 is allegedly led by the party's political commissar, Xavier Kasukuwere, and said to be using First Lady Grace Mugabe in its bid to succeed the 91-year-old Mr. Mugabe, is almost calling the shots in the party now. According to party insiders, the G40 wants to sideline Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa, who already sees himself as Mr. Mugabe's heir apparent, though the president has clearly indicated that he's not handing power to anyone on a silver platter. In this second edition of a two-part series today, we are focusing on the G40 and its attempts to come up with its own person to succeed President Mugabe. As Studio 7's Skip Dube reports, the G40, it seems, has a long way to go before taking full control of ZANU-PF.
Most ZANU-PF stalwarts acknowledge that the so-called Generation 40 is a force to reckon with, as it comprises the young techs who are taking advantage of the current factionalism bedeviling the party to handpick a potential successor to the 91-year-old frail President Robert Mugabe in the near future. Professor Jonathan Moyo, who has more than 26,000 followers on Twitter, recently posted a message which read, quote, so-called Generation 40 or G40 can't be a ZANU-PF faction save for open mouths and shut minds. G40 is a demographic reality across parties, end quote. Observers view this as an open declaration by Professor Moyo that G40 is the in thing in Zimbabwean political parties, including ZANU-PF, where they want to sideline Mnangagwa, who the group believes has too much political baggage to win a national election. They are linking him to the deployment of the 5 Brigade, which allegedly killed thousands of ZAPU supporters in Matabeleland and the Midlands provinces in the 1980s. Senior ZANU-PF Central Committee members like David Ndlovu equates G40 to infiltrators or sellouts who used to work for the Rhodesian government while they were in the trenches with freedom fighters in the 1970s.
During the war, UGF freedom fighters were actually members of the Smith Army who went about posing as freedom fighters and making freedom fighters fight among themselves. I would just take that as a claim from those who want to create division within ZANU-PF.
Ndlovu says there's no evidence that G40, which derives its name from a constitutional provision in Zimbabwe's supreme law, allowing anyone above the age of 40 to be a presidential candidate, is causing havoc in the party.
They are not organizing the party as G40. They are organizing the party in terms of the constitution. I've never come across them fighting any other person.
He says it's healthy to have divergent views in the party, though it becomes destructive if some people are using their acquired power to destroy ZANU-PF.
It is very healthy, although, of course, if it is done constructively, you can't expect people to sing together like they require. People have to differ in opinion, but they have to differ constructively.
Mnangagwa has been on the receiving end of Professor Jonathan Moyo's outburst on Twitter, in which he once attacked him in one of the posts, saying Zimbabweans will miss President Mugabe when he leaves office. Professor Moyo stressed that Mnangagwa's utterances were part of his political machinations to unseat the president. Mnangagwa is allegedly being backed by the old guard comprising Home Affairs Minister Ignatius Chombo, former ZAPU stalwart Kembo Mohati, and several others. He was not available for comment. For observers like London-based international relations expert Clifford Mashiri, G40 has a lot of political stamina to transform ZANU-PF.
These are very powerful people, influential, powerful in the sense that they can influence Mugabe quite a lot, and they are doing so through Mai Mugabe. They are quite a significant part of ZANU-PF, and they have quite a lot that they have done so far. Of course, they have some feuds with the Mnangagwa. It's a bit of a challenge for Mnangagwa to see whether he can agree with them.
He says the group is gaining a lot of political ground in the ruling party.
They have managed to influence Mrs. Mugabe in whatever she is saying against her opponents, and they back her up. They have been doing so through their pronouncements, and in particular Jonathan Moyo, through his account on Twitter. He always tries to ensure he defends and fights for the first family.
Independent political commentator Mlambo Linkomo echoes the same sentiments, adding that their ambitions may be scuttled by the president, who wields a lot of power in ZANU-PF.
If Mugabe is still there, he has a very tight control over ZANU-PF, so much that it's not difficult for anyone within ZANU-PF to raise their hand and say they want to be a future leader.
Andrew Ware of the London-based magazine Africa Confidential argues that G40 does not have a lot of political stamina to change a lot of issues in the ruling party.
Their relationships depend on patronage of more powerful people above them. I don't think that they've got enough strength in their own right to be able to command a lot of support in the party.
Indications are that Generation 40 is there to stay, though its drive to significantly transform the power dynamics in President Robert Mugabe's ZANU-PF party still remains to be seen. Kushungo, as Mr. Mugabe is affectionately known, is currently calling the shots in the party. And even Mnangagwa, who some say is poised to take over from Mr. Mugabe, also knows that nothing is ever cast in stone with his boss, who is known for outfoxing even some of his toughest opponents, both home and away. Reporting for Studio 7 in Washington, D.C., this is Gibbs Dube.
Thanks, Gibbs. Still on politics, the Southern African Political Economy Series, SAPES, is tonight hosting a political dialogue titled Beyond Mugabe, Unpacking Dynamics of a Transitional Authority. And Sandra Nyaira spoke to Ibo Mandaza, chairman of SAPES.
And the speakers are Tendai Biti, president of People's Democratic Party, Professor Sabelo Ndlovu Kacheni of the Archie Mafeji Research Institute, and Pilani Zamtia, the chief executive of the Crisis Coalition of Zimbabwe. So we expect a good turnout and a very robust discussion.
What scenarios are you expecting to come out of the discussion?
We don't know. We want to understand what the transition authority is, and Diabetes will outline that since it's one of his policies of his old document. And we want to draw parallels, if any, between the Zimbabwe situation in the future and the Burkina Faso model, the Burkina Faso situation. After the demise of Kompaoré, there was a transitional authority made up of various parties, civic groups, and some elements of the army. It appeared to be a very good model when it was established, but 3 months later, there was a coup by the head of the presidential guard. And the president and the prime minister were arrested in the process of the coup.
That was Ibo Mandaza, chairman of SAPES, bringing the show to an end. My name is Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.